a procedural teen sex therapy comic drama.
Interesting.
Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed, we are, and it is season 5, episode 13.
Indeed, it is.
So, what is today's topic? Today's topic, Drew. It is a bit warm here. We're not quite
We've certainly got the
tropic.
weather, yeah.
What is today's topic?
Well, on, such a lovely, semi-tropical day, we're talking about the things that we've been sitting indoors and watching and playing. It's kind of a general catch-up on stuff we've been watching and playing lately. Spider-Man Far From Home is out at the moment, which we haven't been able to get to see. We'll probably do an episode on that at some point. We also wanted to see Midsommar on Friday, which is the Swedish folk horror that everybody on my Twitter seems to be raving about. I don't know about yours. I assume we have kind of the same bubble.
Well, intersecting bubbles at least.
Indeed. But yeah, schedules again.
So, well, speaking of Sweden, nifty
Huh?
segue. So basically there's a bit of news. Some of you who follow me on Twitter or read my column on gameindustry.com may know, but for those of you who are pure Argue the Toss fans, you might not know that I'm moving to Sweden, and it'll be in less than a month by the time you're listening to this.
Yep.
So I'm joining Ubisoft Massive as junior narrative designer on a brand new team, and we're working on a big shiny new game. And so that means I'm moving to Malmö in Sweden, which is just over the bridge from Copenhagen, and I am no longer going to be a games journalist. So I'm leaving games journalism to write games full time.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's
Yeah.
quite exciting. But
Yeah.
so 2 weeks ago, I think I wrote my last column for gameindustry.com. It's okay
The
because
column isn't going away.
it isn't. It has now been handed over to Drew. So congratulations to you on being the new columnist for gameindustry.com.
Thank you very much.
Yay! I should have some canned applause.
I mean, if you do read the site, you'll probably already have seen my first column went up on the Friday
Right.
before we recorded this, so you can go and read that. And yeah, it's just really great, and I'm really excited to kind of take over from you. Not excited to take over, but excited to do the column. I wish you weren't going, but yeah.
It's a good space to just like have sort of think about things. And your first column was really great. I was talking
Thank
to
you.
John Breeden, who's our editor at gamestreet.com, and he's like, oh yeah, he came out of the gates with a really great column. So yeah,
Thank you very much.
so check that out. It's about the loss of games through all sorts of reasons, like the sort of changing of technology and changing of licensing rights and things like that, which is kind of a hot topic amongst people about how to store games and keep them for posterity and preserve our historical culture and all that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a
Yeah.
good one.
Oh, thank you very much. And so you might be wondering what that means for Argue the Toss. And it means essentially nothing. We're gonna keep going with this. We already record over Skype, so we'll easily be able to do that with you in Sweden and me in Taunton. So yeah, there should be little to no interruption.
We may have to be a little bit more organized, which will only be good for the show, I guess. But the worst thing is that we won't be able to go to the cinema together. Oh, yeah. So, no cinema buddies anymore. So that's really sad. But yeah, we're hoping to stick to the fortnightly schedule, or every 2 weeks if you're in America and don't know what fortnightly means. And yeah, if anything changes, if we find that's kind of unsustainable, then of course we will let you know and we'll come up with a new exciting format. But for now, Argunitos, service as normal.
Indeed.
So, without further ado, let's get on with the show.
So, like we said, this is just going to be kind of a thing about things we've been watching recently. Things we've like, is yours something you've recently gotten into, or is it something you've been watching for a while? Okay, fair
No,
enough.
recent.
Oh, fair enough. Mine is as well, and I'm kind of late to the party on this one because it's been airing for about 3 or 4 years, and I think most people who are going to watch it already know about it. It airs on Dave. It's called Taskmaster, and you've probably seen it advertised somewhere. And someone recommended it to me about 2, 3 years ago, and well, yeah, not that long, about 2 years ago. And I said, okay, that's on my list, and I never got around to it until a couple of weeks ago, where I was just looking for something new and light to watch, so I went back to this, and they were right about assuming that I would like it because I just immediately got addicted to it. So, I mean, if you've not seen the show, it's structured into seasons in which they get a kind of team of five comedians who come back for every episode, and they record a bunch of really kind of small tasks that they're given tasks to do, which are usually like pretty simple and simplistic, but have like a twist or something complex in them, or they're difficult to do without lateral thinking, and they're scored on this by the Taskmaster, the comedian Greg Davis. And
Okay, so
over the course of the series, they build up a score, and there's a series champion at the end.
What's Greg Davis been in? Just for people to have reference.
I guess the thing I've seen him in most is like the Inbetweeners. He does a lot of panel show stuff. He does 8 out of 10 Cats, does Countdown a lot, and Would I Lie to You and things like that. And he's a stand-up comedian who you might have seen on like Live at the Apollo and stuff. And he's just there because he's got a very like he's got that Mr. Gilbert from the Inbetweeners personality where he can be very kind of mean and overbearing, but also very funny.
I think that's that's probably a good shout for people who won't have seen his BBC, because he's done BBC sort of comedy sitcoms as well,
Yes,
hasn't
he
he?
has, and yeah, I haven't seen any of those, so you
No,
know,
but yeah, I'd forgotten he was in Inbetweeners.
But so I was talking about it to a friend of mine, and just saying, "Oh, I've gotten into this." Someone recommended this to me. I've gotten into this a lot recently, and she said, "Really? Like just as if it was a weird show to get obsessed with." So I went away and started like trying to pick apart why I'd suddenly fallen so hard for this. Like it's a comedy panel show that's made and aired on Dave or which one of those channels. I think it is Dave, in fact.
It is. That's the first place I've heard about it. I haven't seen a trailer, so I know nothing about it other than that it's a thing on Dave.
And Dave does a lot of those things, and they're kind of usually of decent, if not great quality. They're not. Well, I don't know many people who like regularly tune into Dave shows. So she's like, "That's a weird thing to get obsessed with." So I went away and like tried to pick apart why I was so interested in it. And like what I came up with that it is that it just it's the same reason I got into shows like The Crystal Maze. It's something that really shows the interesting and unexpected parts of game design, because all of these tasks, as simple as they are just kind of little designed games which then inevitably go completely awry as the players do something you completely don't expect. So, for example, they give you tasks like conceal a pineapple on your person. And like you'll see, five comedians do five different things. Some of them might like slice it up and try to hide it under their clothes. Some of them like drink as much of it as they can and then put the rest in their pockets. And
So are they given a room with things in it to help? Because I was like, well, there's not many places you can hide a pineapple,
no,
like
exactly.
under your jumper, Do they get a top hat?
No, there's a house which that most of the tasks take place in, and they're allowed to kind of
Okay.
move around the house and use anything in the house. So it has a kitchen, so you can go and like find a knife to chop it up or find a blender to like liquidize it.
Oh, so it's not like a studio panel show.
Well, it is and it isn't, because they pre-record all of these little mini tasks, and then they
Okay.
come into the studio at the end of all that taping, and they do like a set of like live shows where it's kind of just them sitting in a line being judged by Greg Davis, and then there's one live task
Okay, how
at the end of the show.
interesting.
Yeah, it's a really weird and interesting structure for a show. But yeah, like it just, I was watching it again. I was looking at it in the context of just some of the like weird issues that come up when you're
Okay.
trying to design a game for someone. And you know, we play a lot of RPGs, so we've got a lot of people like who GM and try to do this. And
Right.
any GM who's GM a lot will tell you that players will always do something else than you were
Yeah.
expecting. So yeah, for example, there's a task in season two where all of the contestants are told they've got three like big exercise balls, big medicine balls, and the task is put these three medicine balls on the yoga mat on the top of that hill, and they're behind a, you know, like a maybe 50-foot high hill, something like that. And so they all set about trying to roll them up the hill, or one of them goes and gets a member of the public and says, "Can you take this up with me?" And like, instead of doing all three at once herself. And one of the catchphrases that's used on the show is that all of the information on the t is on the task, so you can like try to interpret it as best you can.
Okay.
So Richard Osman's interpretation is, "Okay, I've got to put these three balls on the yoga mat on top of the hill," but it doesn't necessarily mean that the yoga mat has to be on top of the hill. They're just specifying a yoga mat. It's got to be that one. So he goes up, gets the yoga mat, brings it
Brings
down,
it
and puts
down.
them. Yeah,
Brilliant.
and like the hosts are not annoyed, but like they debate it and say, "Okay, is that valid?" And I think
Right.
in that case they kind of phoned Susie Dent and got her to, yeah, and got her to say, "Is this valid?" And she said, "Well, yeah, it's a weird interpretation, but it is valid." So he won the task, and they gave him the points and, you know,
Okay.
complimented
You
on
might
his
need to
creativity.
explain who Susie Dent is.
She is if you're listening outside the UK, you will not be familiar with you might not be familiar with Countdown. Anyone in the UK, I think, will be familiar with Countdown, which is a show in which you're given nine letters and you have to make the longest word you can out of them. And they have a section on it called Dictionary Corner, which is presented by Susie Dent, who is a lexicographer and knows a lot about words because of
Yeah,
that.
she works for the Oxford English
She
Dictionary,
does, yes.
basically. Yeah, so she's a real words person. That's brilliant. He phoned
Yeah.
Susie Dent, and she's like a really well-known TV personality just from being Dictionary Corner on
Yes,
Countdown in the
indeed, which is really
UK.
weird.
Like,
She, well,
everybody knows her.
yeah, I've also got like a couple of her books on my shelf because I'm just geekily interested in etymology and
Yeah, me
lexicography as
too.
well. Yeah. So yeah, there are other t some of the tasks are like set up to be funny and to have a solution which nobody notices, which they can kind of gotcha, you know, the contestants at the end on the live table and say, "Well, you could have just done this." One of my favorites was the contestants were asked to go into a room with all the lights off and asked to, it's pitch black, and they're given a paintbrush and a bunch of paint in glow in the dark pots, so you can't see the color of the paints. And they're asked to paint a rainbow scene using the paints on the table, and that's what it says on the task. So they all, you know, try this with very, and there are various different solutions because all of the paints are scented, like the like things that are the color of the paint, so they can, if they work that out, they can do that. There, I think they were also put in a particular order, or and things of that nature. But at the end, one of them just like the last contestant who they showed the effort of, he just went over and turned the lights on. Because there's nothing on the task that says,
So you can't,
yeah, it's
right?
absolutely. And, you know, that was something that they planned in advance and said, "Yeah, we even put a bit of glow in the dark tape around the switch so you'd know where it was." And
Wow,
yeah, it's just very good. And yeah, it's just really interesting if you're into like game design or the weird things that people will do within a set of rules and the way that people will try to lawyer their way out of a certain restriction.
It's like classic Richard Osman to
Yeah.
like to do that, just like break the game almost with cleverness.
And yeah, they get at least one person on a season who will just try to take that to its absolute extreme. So they've got Rod Gilbert in one season, and he's constantly, you know, trying to break the rules. James A. Caster, these are British comedians who people might not be familiar with, mm-hmm. but they all have kind of an anarchic
kick, yeah.
sense of humor. So that they will all try to break the rules, and it ends up being very, very funny. So if you haven't seen it, and I'm not sure how popular the show is, because it seems to be kind of
cult following.
Yeah, like there's lots of my friends who have heard of it and are like, oh yeah, everyone's heard of that, and then there was you who hadn't heard of it until I kind of started talking
about it. I had no idea what it was. But then didn't you say, because we were talking about it the other night at dinner, didn't you say that there's sort of a story that runs through it as well?
Yeah. Well, so what's interesting about it is that when they originally pitched the show, the producers were like, okay, well, you need to make this so that we can air the episodes in any order, because they're all kind of individual and it's just, you know, three tasks and a live task, so they're kind of interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
And the creator, who the comedian Alex Horn, said, well, no, we want to actually do this sequentially so that we can kind of establish narratives throughout the episode. And that does actually work really well, because it means that if someone's constantly doing badly on certain tasks, they can start making fun of them and it makes sense. And
right.
it just, yeah. So what you get is kind of a generated story throughout these. The series go between 5 and 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just really interesting to follow.
Okay. So is it the same 5 people for a whole season?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, are they teams or are they working as individuals against each other?
Generally individuals, but they do occasionally just team them up and do team tasks.
Just for
maybe one task every 2 episodes, they'll do a team task.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's good to just like grab a season and watch it through to see what it's about. I highly recommend just seeing if you're into the show, because if you're like me, you're going to fall really hard for it. It's just game theory. It's like getting a bunch of people in a room and actually making them do the Prisoner's Dilemma, just giving them a weird situation which they've got to get out of.
Yeah. It's almost like a puzzle room.
Exactly. And like some of them are specifically that. Like I watched one the other day where they had a bucket on the floor and a bucket suspended from the ceiling filled with sand, and they were handcuffed to a cork that was holding the sand in the bucket, and they had to transfer as much of the sand from one bucket to the other, and they weren't like above or below each other, they were on like different areas of the room, without touching the sand or moving the buckets, using stuff that was on a table beside them. But of course, as soon as they reached for anything, they pulled the cork out. And So some of them just like did it immediately and realized, oh shit, I've got to kind of come up with a solution on the fly now. And some of them were like gingerly leaning over and trying to get something to measure how much sand there was in the bucket. It's really interesting because they always come up with incredibly different approaches to the puzzles that they're
solving. Right. Oh, that's interesting. So do they do it one at a time?
Yes, yeah, they do.
Okay, cool. Oh, that sounds interesting. I might watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can stream it on UK TV Play for free. You don't have to have an account there or anything, as far as I know. Outside of the UK, probably different story.
Yeah, so you might get some clips or something on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so Taskmaster, check it out.
Indeed.
All those game design people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically the things I've been enjoying recently, I don't know if it's because I've been struggling to find things. I've been mostly watching films because, obviously because I'm moving to Sweden, as I said at the beginning, and I'm trying to finish Before I Forget, which is the game I'm writing, so I have to have the script done on that. So everything is like, my life is this swirling maelstrom of stuff. So series have tended to go by the wayside for me because they just require too much commitment and like concentration.
Yeah.
Whereas a film I can kind of do. And I'm tending towards more lighter stuff. So the things I've enjoyed recently have both been kind of teen coming of age comic dramas. Last weekend I was in London during a massive heat wave. Well, it was like this, it's been warm for like a few weeks now, but it was like this massive spike in London where it went up to 33 degrees. I don't know what that is in American, but it's hot. It's
It's
very hot
damn
for
hot.
here. Yeah, exactly. So me and my brother planned, because we knew I was going to be in London, it's like, what are we going to do? It's going to be hot. And so we decided to hide in the cinema, which was actually a genius idea that nobody else seemed to have thought of. I guess they were all sweating in the sun somewhere, getting heat stroke with a pint of beer or something. So we basically had this cinema room to ourselves. There were two other people in there, but it was quite a small screen. And the Hackney Picture House has really, really seriously comfortable seats, as just its standard seats are really nice. And we went to see Booksmart, which is directed by Olivia Wilde. I knew her name, but I didn't know who she is. But she's from House, apparently. That's like her biggest thing was House. And this was her directorial debut, and it was fantastic. So if you don't know, it's just come out fairly recently, a few weeks ago. I think it's on quite a limited release because I don't think it's come out at our local cinema in Taunton, which is unfortunate because it's really, really good. And I'd go as far as to say it's probably one of the best teen movies ever made. It was that good. We came out feeling really happy, and it's about two girls, high school girls, are about to graduate from high school, and they are the outsider nerds who just like put their head in the books, and they didn't go to the parties, and they didn't like care about boys and stuff. They were just focusing. They wanted to get good grades to get into a good college. And then it finally gets to the sort of last few days of school. And the main character is like, oh my God, our high school is going to be over, and we've basically done nothing, and all we did was study. And her friend is like, but that was fine, right? We had a good time. And she's like, no, we need to like live our lives. She's like, because we just study to get good grades to get into college. And she's like, yeah, and we did that. And she's like, yeah, but so did the slacker kids who went to all the parties and did this and had boys and everything. They all got into good colleges. So it was like her sort of illusions are shattered. And so it leads to this night of trying to get to the party and do the thing. So it's kind of a standard formula, apart from the fact that it's not boys. So yeah, it's these two girls who are really supportive of each other, and their be all isn't about getting a guy, although there is a guy that one of them likes, and one of the other one she likes a girl. There's this girl, this sort of like cute, quirky skater girl that she's in love with from afar. So it's not about going to prom and all that sort of thing. It's just about sort of living their life and having that high school experience. And yeah, it's really inclusive in terms of the types of characters, and it uses the classic archetypes of, so the athlete and the sort of queen bitch who like rolls into school in an open top car, and then they're the outcasts, and then there's this rich kid who's like trying really hard to make everyone like him, and it's just kind of, he reminds me of Jason Bateman. Like if I think a young Jason Bateman would have played him, he's just like this really sort of over the top energetic kid. He's just, yeah, he's really funny and sweet. But we see nobody's really mean to each other. They're all actual people, as opposed to the sort of 80s teen films or 80s, 90s, noughties teen films where, the mean people are actually mean. We actually get to see the archetypes from a new perspective, and we realize that she's kind of well, to lead on from our last episode, she's actually an unreliable narrator
Okay,
in
cool.
the way that we've perceived these characters and the way they actually are. Yeah, just gets revealed as the film goes on. So yeah, so it's really interesting, and the idea of the friendship of the two girls as well, because often girls are pitted against each other in these kinds of things, and they're just really supportive of each other. They'll like sort of get dressed up in what they think is like a really cool outfits, and they're in like boiler suits essentially, but they've like and berets, and you know, sort of like they've got some feminist badge on like pin on their lapel or something, and they'll come out and they'll be like, oh my god, you look amazing, like call an ambulance, we have a fashion emergency, and
Yeah.
they're always buoying each other up and like completely oblivious to the fact that that their outfits are actually quite terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really funny, the soundtrack's amazing. And I just really like the way they have the archetypes and then kind of reveal the people beneath them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a really joyous, uplifting film. It has a sort of weird kind of ballet moment in it, in a sort of old Hollywood musical style. Not like they're in tutus and things, but they have this weird sort of dance section when she sees the. She realizes she actually likes this guy who she thought she hated, and she realizes actually she quite likes him. And yeah, so like all the lights go out apart from spotlights on them, and all you can hear are their footsteps, and then this music comes in, and it's just like, yeah, it's really sort of deftly made. It looks stunning. It looks really beautiful for. You know, what is essentially is a teen coming of age, you know, sort of summer film, but it has this kind of indie film look to it. Like the lighting's really gorgeous, and yeah, the sort of costume design's really cool. And yeah, and then one of the other female characters is just this completely eccentric. She's just incredible. I don't want to like spoiler the film because you know all these things get revealed. But yeah, there's some just really cool characters in it. And then the other thing I've been watching, which is kind of like leads on from that, is Sex Education, which is a Netflix show. And it again is a coming of age teen drama, but it's actually a procedural teen sex therapy comic drama.
Interesting.
Yeah, so basically the lead character Otis, his mother, played by Gillian Anderson, is a sex therapist, and she yeah, so she has her practice in their house, and Otis's best friend Eric says, you know, oh, it must be so cool having a mum who's a sex therapist. And he's like, no, it really isn't,
Yeah,
because
why would
obviously
that be cool?
I don't know. I think it's because it's got sex in it, and Eric wants to have sex and is all about the sex, whereas Otis is kind of repressed and anxious about sex and his sexuality, and has anxiety about masturbating.
Yeah.
And then his mum is always, she has no boundaries because obviously she's so open about talking about sex, which is probably it's the worst thing a teenager could imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having a really frank parent too. So what happens is Otis, because he's kind of absorbed a lot of the stuff his mother knows, he can talk to kids about sex and their problems with sex. So he becomes a sex therapist, an impromptu sex therapist at his school.
Right.
Yeah, so that's where the procedural sex therapy comes in. So every episode, a student comes to him with a problem to do with sex, their sex life, or something or other within the school dynamic. So yeah, it's all the high school kids, and yeah, so it's really cool. So every episode, there's like a case he kind of has to solve. Meanwhile, he's trying to determine this girl that he likes, or does he like her? So there's a will they, won't they kind of thing going on. And again, it's got all the it's got like the Heathers gang, So the sort of, like rich, snotty kids, the popular kids. But one of them is a South Asian gay guy. And then Eric is black of African heritage, and he's gay, and he could so easily have become the extravagant kind of gay black best friend, nothing more than that. But actually, his character arc is both sort of heartbreaking and uplifting, to see, his struggle, not coming to terms with being gay, because he's out, but just the way people react to him, and the struggles of fitting in, and how he decides to fit in, whether he decides to be himself or sort of tone down who he is in order to, So it's got this real comedy element to it, but then there is, as the show goes on, there are some really hard hitting, sort of quite heartbreaking moments as well. And it's just really great. I think both of them have unisex bathrooms in the schools,
Okay.
which is a Booksmart definitely does. I can't remember with Sex Education, but Booksmart has this unisex bathroom and has a whole, the usual bullying scene where someone's in the toilet crying and then they hear the mean people talking about them. And you have that scene, but it's involves both boys and girls because they use the same bathroom, which was really cool. And then, it turns out that no one is purely mean. There's no sort of pantomime villain, which I really like about both of those shows. Well, the film and the show. I suppose one of the things is that they still both center awkward white characters. But I mean, if you look back to the teen movies that are held up as, the sort of, the hallowed ones, they're the John Hughes films, and they're intrinsically problematic because he always had to, well, he either had no people of color at all, which is generally his rule of thumb, or the racist character in 16 Candles, and then he always has some sort of toxic masculinity in there, like always, whether it's sort of date rape or just sort of gross over-sexualization of women and objectification of the girls and women in his films. And this is a huge step forward, and I'm so glad that teen films and dramas are now not doing that, because that was the blueprint for so long. Even with like American Pie and stuff, which was doing something different, but it was still essentially trying to, film girls in their undies on a webcam.
I mean, I guess it's we're hitting the kind of generation of filmmakers now who grew up as teenagers alongside those films and were then kind of like affected by the effect that they had on culture. So we're like, we're seeing this kind of backlash to that with like the two things you've described, and like the other one that springs to mind is that Bo Burnham eighth grade film as well, which I haven't seen, but I've heard like kind of touches on a lot of the similar points.
And then another Netflix is Everything Sucks, which I absolutely adored. It was so good. I just binged that. Me and Keith Stewart absolutely binged that. It's set in the 90s, so the music's amazing. And that has a black male lead character. The characters are slightly younger, I think. I don't know, maybe you'd call it junior high. I don't know. As opposed to kind of, I don't know, 17-year-olds, which I think is Sex Education. But it's got a black male lead character who goes to film club at school and falls in love with this girl who's kind of like tomboyish. And then he says, goes home to his mum and describes this girl, and the first thing he says about her is that she's clever and funny and has really great taste in in music or something, and then
Yeah.
it's like, oh, and she's really pretty, which is just like, it's a very subtle thing, but it's like really important. And yeah, so once again, there are sort of homosexual relationships are explored in that as well. Yeah, so I recommend Everything Sucks as well. Binge watch that, but it's not, it got cancelled because it was too expensive to
Oh, that's a
make,
shame.
apparently. Yeah, it was so good, it was lovely, but I think Sex Education comes a close second to that. So yeah, I highly recommend both of those. They're really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely kind of sold me on all three of them. I don't know where I'm going to find the time to watch all of that, but
I mean, the good thing is Sex Education's only 8 episodes, which is quite nice,
Yeah.
because it's set in the UK. The other thing is the weird thing, I guess it's because it's a Netflix thing and they're trying to bridge the cultural gap. So the production design of Sex Education is really weird because it's set in a British school. And it's, I think it's in like the Wye Valley, so it's really,
Okay.
really gorgeous setting.
Yeah.
Like Gillian Anderson has this amazing sort of Victorian house nestled in some trees in a valley. It's beautiful, and I reckon tourism's going to go up there just based on this show.
Yeah.
But then the sort of athlete character has this Letterman jacket, so there's this American collegiate style which we just don't have in schools
No.
here. They don't wear school uniforms, which they definitely would in a UK school. So it's weird because it's like a UK school sort of system and structure, but then they've got this like, yeah, American collegiate kind of thing where they have swim meets and stuff like that. And yeah,
That's kind of
so I
strange.
guess to kind of bridge that, because Netflix, yeah, bridge that, those cultures a bit. But
Yeah.
yeah, so, and it's got this kind of 80s vibe to it as well, like the clothes and their houses and things have this kind of retro vibe. But do they use phone? Yeah, they do use phone, mobile phones. So yeah, so it has this kind of out of place feel to it, which is really nice as well. Yeah, I mean, obviously Everything Sucks is set in the 90s, so that clearly has that. And then Booksmart also has that kind of retro design to it, even though it's contemporary. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, they all look beautiful and do interesting things with the teen format. Recommend.
Yep. Well, recommendation noted. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch at least one of those things.
Yeah. So basically, if you're watching anything you'd like to recommend, if there's something you'd like us to talk about that we haven't covered, then please do that.
Yeah.
And where can they do that, Drew?
They can do that on Twitter at ArgueTheCast, and we are on Spotify and iTunes and all of the places that you get your podcast. You can also obviously find us on GameIndustry.com underneath in the podcast section, which is underneath the Europhiles column section, which I have recently moved into.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Make sure you read Drew's column.
I'd forgotten about that. Didn't want to mention it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a good one. I'm glad you're taking over that spot. I
Yeah.
feel happy to have, yeah.
Well, you know, I just hope I can do even half as good a job as you did.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm totally sure you will. I'm convinced you will. So, cool. We've got some things to watch on our culture exchange.
Yeah, and you know, let us know if you watch any of the stuff off the back of this episode, whether you want to watch one of
Yes.
three incredibly meaningful sounding comedy teen dramas, or whether you just want to watch Ramesh Ranganathan throw a tea bag into a mug from the longest distance. Whichever you like, you tell us what you thought, and we'll read it and reply, I guess.
Both great ways to spend a summer, I reckon.
Indeed.
And with that, until next time, Drew.
Cheerio. Cool.
Another one in the bag.
Yeah.